Good afternoon, calling State Affairs to order at 3:19 p.m. Thursday, April 19th in the Max Grunberg Room of the Capitol. Will the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Johnson, Representative Tuck, Representative Josephson, Alderman.
Here.
Representative Knopf, Representative Wolf.
Here.
Representative Pop, Alderman, Representative Ledoux, Representative Birch.
Here.
Chair Christ Tompkins.
Here. And with four members present, we have a quorum to conduct business. And Representative Tuck is excused today, and I believe Representative Johnson also isn't able to make it and notified us in advance. Two items on today's docket, HDR 30, urging U.S. support for refugees from Representative Josephson, and HJR 11, a first hearing from Representative Tarr, which is relating to the overturn of Citizens United. And there's a CS for HJR 11. At this time, I'm going to move to HJR 30. And Representative Josephson, any opening comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that just very, very briefly, the essence of the resolution is an expression of concern with refugees worldwide, sympathy for their plight, and a belief that the national government as well as the people of Alaska have concern with their plight, and that we should intervene where we can, when we can. And that's its essence. I think it's an important reflection of sort of this historic moment. We've always had, as the chair knows, we've had refugees have been a thing spanning all time, but it's a crisis, particularly now, and I think the legislature should offer this positive comment of concern or expression of concern.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, uniquely situated as sponsor and member of the committee. There was an amendment deadline for HJR 30. No amendments were submitted by the deadline. We have previously heard public testimony. That takes us to committee discussion on HJR 30. Any thoughts from the committee on this piece of legislation?
Sure. I'll venture forth.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's very little I can argue or disagree with, I guess, in the resolution as far as the numbers of refugees, and I think Representative Josephson mentioned something about this country being supportive or helpful. Maybe we're more of taking in different groups of refugees or immigrants, and we certainly aren't geographically located to handle millions of people coming across our border since we have oceans on both sides. But I guess my only one question would be, and I know this came up last time, what are you proposing we do? I mean, it says, you know, try to make the world a better place to live in, I think, so that we don't have so many refugees. It mentions the National Bureau of Economic Research during refugees' 21st years in the United States contributes over 21,000 more in taxes than the refugee receives in benefits, and no evidence of linking it to crime. Is that, I guess, and I believe I know the answer, but Representative Josephson isn't suggesting we, accept X number of refugees because they will add to the economy and they don't commit crime, because you're just suggesting that we make the world a better place, and if it comes up and if refugees come here, we'll take them, but we're not trying to bring in 65 million people, obviously.
Through the chair, that's correct. I think that the resolves reflect a belief that the legislature would reflect in a positive vote that we share with the concern of the international community, and we support the efforts of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees to work with nonprofits, that we want to do our share. We can define what that is, and we've had that debate. But that we play a role as well but that nothing should change in terms of our vetting of individuals who might seek refugee status in the United States. Nothing in the resolution reflects any change in that sort of protocol.
Thank you.
Seeing no further comment, Representative Wohl.
I move HGR 30, version 30-LS1177/D from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing and hearing no objection, the piece of legislation, HGR 30, moves from committee. Thank you, Representative Josephson. That takes us to the next item on today's agenda, HJR 11. This is a first hearing, and staff from Representative Tarr's office is here to introduce the piece of legislation and make other remarks. Welcome, Ms. Oliveras.
Through the chair, my name is Magdalene Oliveras, staff to Representative Karen Tarr of House District 19 in Anchorage. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify before you on the importance of urging Congress to overturn the 2010 Supreme Court case known as Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission. Citizens United is a 501c4 nonprofit organization in the United States that was founded in 1988. In 2010, the organization won a U.S. Supreme Court case against the Federal Election Commission with a vote of 5-4, which swept aside more than a century of legal precedent that banned corporate money from political campaigns. The Supreme Court ruled that corporations and unions can give an unlimited amount of money to political committees active in election campaigns, which overturned the foundation of America's campaign finance laws that, up until then, had prevented the wealthiest individuals and large corporations from undue influence over the American political system. Members of the committee, the fact of the matter is that large corporations own much of the American economy and wealth, and with the Supreme Court's decision in 2010, large corporations and the wealthiest people in the nation have the opportunity to heavily influence campaigns at all levels of the U.S. government, like the White House, the U.S. Senate, the U.S. House, governor seats, state legislatures, and state judicial branches. The Citizens United decision relies on the idea that corporations are people, that money is speech, and having the ability to donate undisclosed amounts of money to politicians is not a form of corruption. This is not the vision that our founding fathers had for our country or for our government. It's actually the complete opposite. American democracy is where all people, regardless of income, can participate in the political process and run for office. American democracy is where we have one person and one vote, and where equal access is essential. Returning to a government of, by, and for the people, and not the billionaires or giant corporations won't be easy, but it helps that a movement has been building all over the country. Members of the committee, it's important that we take the time to recognize that this is not a partisan issue. Republicans, Democrats, and independents across the country are coming together to say that enough is enough. 19 states have gone on record in favor of a U.S. constitutional amendment to restore power to Congress and the states to put some limits on campaign spending. At the local level, we also see that more than 700 local governments have also demanded constitutional action to reinstate controls on campaign spending. And as I close, I'd like to point members of the committee to the 18 letters of support our office has received coming from areas all over the state and from people registered to different parties. And they're all coming together for this American cause. Along with the letters from the individuals, we've also collected letters of support from most of the community councils in the Anchorage area, along with other parts of the state. Thank you for taking the time to listen to my brief testimony on House Joint Resolution 11. And please let myself or Representative Tarr know if you have any questions.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to recognize and welcome Representative Tarr, who joined us 3 or 4 minutes ago.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we're in HES committee, pardon me. Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage. And Magdalena did an excellent job with the introduction. And the only thing that I would like to add is it's been a goal of mine during my time in the legislature to look for opportunities to increase voter participation and increase participation in our government. And so things like same-day voter registration or the PFD voter registration, you know, things that help people get access and get them into the system has been a goal. I see this as very contrary to that goal, because what is happening is that so much money is being spent in campaigns that people are tuning out and not even wanting to participate. The number of commercials people are having to see, the number of mailers that they're receiving, I remember door knocking a couple years ago, walking up to a house where there was just a box outside with a note on it that said, just put your flyer there. They were so sick of getting so many flyers and phone calls and commercials, they were just tuning out. And so my concern is that if we do not limit the financial ability of corporations and billionaires to have influence, that it will have the impact of people not participating because they get so frustrated, they get so turned off, there's so much negative campaigning, they feel like nothing is true, and that is a, that's something that can damage our democracy. And so I really see this as essential to civic participation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Questions from the committee? Representative Knopp?
It's not a question, Representative Tarr. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've often wondered about this. Here's the problem with campaigning is there's no truth in advertising anymore. People don't have any idea what they're listening to, how truthful it is or not. So I imagine the amounts of money you're talking about are probably leans towards that. But I wish, you know, there are truth in advertising laws that are just completely ignored. And I would hope at some point we're pursuing a resolution, we'd get back to some of that. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Birch.
I know if we're just looking for comments at this point, or
I think we can just go ahead and transition.
Yeah, I'm not in support of this. I think the issue of the concerns voiced about, you know, too many dollars in campaigns and too many brochures at the in my mailbox and or too many, you know, people showing up in my driveway to talk to me about issues. I think that's, you know, it's a free country. I think that free speech is a you know, kind of a bedrock principle. I think this speaks to that. It speaks to allowing a public an opportunity to hear from everyone. I know from personal experience, I was amazed when I put my first bid for kind of semi-public office in Anchorage with the Chugach Electric Board. And I was amazed to find the level of investment that was being made by unions representative of people that they chose to support on the board. And it just dwarfed the amount of dollars that any private citizen or ratepayer would step up and pay. So I think, the idea that, but just the same, they have that right and entitlement to do that. And I think if the public chooses to, write a check and do, you know, support somebody in one manner or another, I think they have every right to. I think this decision and urging Congress to overturn the Citizens United decision, I guess I don't see any good reason to support it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Birch. Representative Tarr?
Mr. Chairman, if I might just respond to that. I appreciate those comments, Representative Birch, through the chair. And I guess I would just say what's interesting, if you contrast that, in Alaska, we do have campaign finance limitations, right? So, you know, to the extent an individual wants to participate, you can donate up to $500 per year per candidate. We have limitations on PAC donations, and I don't think we want to limit the ability for that participation, but is there value in having unlimited participation? Is there value in letting those dollars be unlimited? And I think that's really the question for me, not so much about just whether that activity happens, but are there reasonable limits that we can place on that make sure that and I would hope it would lead to what Representative Knopp was suggesting, that we have more truth in advertising, really, so that people are getting accurate information and getting the government that they want to support.
Yes, and I, before you do, like to note Representative LeDoux joined us at 3:33. Representative Birch.
Yeah, I guess on that, I would not see it favorably for the government to intervene in deciding, what sort of limits or constraints I might want to put on that level of speech. And to the extent that it is speech, I think that we need to be, you know, walk very carefully in any effort to constrain that level of communication. Thank you.
Other comments from the committee or questions? Yeah. Representative Josephson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been neglectful in not yet having read Citizens United. If anyone's ever tried to read a Supreme Court decision, and I've read many of them, it can take several hours if you want to do it efficiently. They can be 100 pages. 60 pages is typical. And so one needs to carve out time. Of course, this has been a number of years. My understanding of Citizens United is that it allows through channels, effectively, for donations to come from out of the country. And if I'm wrong, I invite a committee member to share that opinion. It strikes me as not particularly uncanny, then, that there was meddling in the election 2 years ago. Now, some of that was done in such a way that no one could have monitored it or known about it in any event, and that's a whole other issue. Our own limitation that Representative Tarr talked about, the $500 donation, was challenged in federal court. A constituent of mine, Judge, Federal District Court Judge Burgess, affirmed our right to have that limit. I haven't read that opinion either. I think that's going to the Ninth Circuit. That's my understanding. Former boss of mine, State Representative David Finkelstein, testified in support of the existing law. He was very involved in the creation of that law in the late 80s, early 90s. I think it served Alaska well because although we have plenty of money in politics, the power of the individual has been supreme, and a person can not be drowned out completely by the sound of corporate money. So I think that I have grave concerns about the Citizens United decision, and I suspect, and I think it's appropriate to quote Washington and Madison and the Federalist Papers, I suspect it's not what they had in mind. They couldn't have envisioned it, and I support the resolution.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I just want to understand something. Did the Citizens United ruling, and I remember, you know, corporations are people and money is speech. Did that just mean that corporations could donate as much as they wanted to? And is that what we're trying to put a limit on it? Is that the general thrust of what we're trying to do here?
Through the chair to Representative Wool, yes, there's been more than just that Supreme Court decision that have had influence over political spending and campaigns, but the unlimited nature and the non-disclosure are the two really key elements that are problematic. And just as to put some numbers, in 2006, $286 million was spent on campaigns by super PACs, nonprofits, unions, and political organizations. By 2016, that had grown to $1.6 billion being spent on campaigns.
Follow up, Representative Wolf?
I'll comment, I guess, and I realize the system is not what it should be, and I agree with that. I know this was a close decision, and if it had gone the other way, we wouldn't have as much spending and I don't know who's doing all the spending, and I know they don't disclose the individuals. I know they're from PACs, I guess, and but I think there is too much spent on the overall game. I wish we had like a one-month election and everyone got a set amount and go for it, but I know some places do that, but yeah, I agree the system needs some work, and if this helps, that's good.
Mr. Chairman, one other thing I might add in, and it's not so true at the state level, but certainly more for members of Congress, is that it's estimated that now members of Congress are spending 20 to 30 hours a week on fundraising. And when we think about some of the gridlock in Washington, D.C., and maybe why some things aren't getting done, I just have to question whether this pressure to raise so much money because it's changed the context that everybody's operating in is another way it's really impacting our democracy, because not only are people getting turned off, but then the actual elected officials are having to spend so much time on raising money that it's taking away from the time they could otherwise be spending on governing.
Representative Ledoux.
Couldn't you say just the opposite, though, that if you did away with the super PACs that are allowed through Citizens United, the independent expenditure groups, that the members of Congress might actually have to spend more money fundraising?
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux, it would shift maybe who's raising the money, but I think part of the motivation for this is that we could get to a point where there's less money, whether it be through independent expenditures or super PACs. But this unlimited spending is, I think, more the concern, whether it's the vehicle is through independent expenditures or through super PACs, I think is not quite as important as the overall influence of the unlimited dollars.
But
Polo?
How would eliminating, you said that members of Congress were spending sometimes 20 to 30 hours a week fundraising. So if you did away with, if we reversed Citizens United, and that would, I think a super PAC and an independent expenditure are the same thing, so you don't allow those. How would that affect the amount of time that members of Congress spent fundraising, though?
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux, if you had a well-financed opponent who would have support from these super PACs and the tens and, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, that would put more pressure on you as the opponent to have to try to keep up and compete with that level of fundraising. And so in that way, you would have to spend more of your time fundraising to match that other person's time and money that they have. You know, that you'd have to be matching the access that they would get through the dollars raised by raising the dollars yourself if you didn't otherwise have somebody, you know, who was running a super PAC for you. But I do know there are circumstances where those two things are not the exact same thing. In terms of knowledge by the candidate versus totally independent, and money going directly to a campaign versus money spent to influence voters about that particular candidate.
Thank you. And I should note it's my intention to hold this bill as we do all pieces of legislation on a first hearing. I believe there is, the sponsor has a work CS or a CS to use as the working draft. Would you be able to speak to any changes in that CS? Representative Tarr, Ms. Olivares.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So the CS is the version /D. And the most probably important change was what's added in the be it resolved clauses, where, let me just find the right one so I can match these up. So you'll see that there in the original version was just one be it resolved, and this one spoke to the, you know, the Citizens United one. But now in the new version, there's a second be it resolved. And this one calls on the United States Congress to prepare and present to the states for ratification an amendment to the United States Constitution, clarifying that corporations do not have the rights of individuals, that expenditures of money are not protected as speech, and that the authority to regulate campaign finance lies within elected representatives of the people of the United States. And there's been an evolving approach to how to address this in terms of what mechanism to use for overturning the decision. So now there's a move towards looking at, you know, a constitutional amendment process that would go through ratification by individual states.
And I just have a quick question, I guess in part with the second and new clause, but more in general. It's my understanding that if Citizens United were reversed, that presently both corporations and unions have the right to make unlimited expenditures. And just to be grossly simplify things, there's, I think, conventional wisdom that the labor movement generally donates more to progressive or left-of-center candidates and corporations more to right-of-center candidates, exceptions, of course. Is it fair to say that were Citizens United to be reversed and that the United States Constitution were to be clarified that corporations do not have the rights of individuals, et cetera, that would allow for limits to be placed on the expenditures, the independent expenditures of both unions and corporations? Is that accurate?
To the chair, yes.
Okay.
And in that sense, you know, depending on where you're at in the political spectrum, I think you've described it accurately that people perceive that, you know, one group benefits more from the spending of one and the other. And so in that way, sort of has some equal impact, if you will.
Sure. And I just wanted to confirm that because I actually share Representative Birch's concern that if you're, I mean, it's not a formal state election, but if you were and you're, you know, coming up against the just buzzsaw of a huge amount of unlimited money, it doesn't quite feel fair necessarily, regardless of what side of the political spectrum you're on. Representative Ledoux.
So did the Citizens United decision interpret a federal law, or was it strictly based upon constitutional grounds? And the reason I ask that is the first, be it resolved, it urges the United States to pass legislation overturning the decision. And I think that is in both the CS and in the original. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that the U.S. Congress, if the Supreme Court has declared something unconstitutional, I don't think that Congress can pass a law and say, yes, it's constitutional, period. I mean, so your second, if I'm right, your second resolved makes sense to me, but not necessarily your first resolved.
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux, as I was saying, there's a couple different ways people have been approaching this in terms of making changes that they think would be positive. The constitutional amendment, of course, would redefine free speech to be limited to persons, you know, individual human beings, and that in that way you would limit it to not apply to corporations and to the unions.
Okay.
But absent that, then you could otherwise look at laws that are about fair campaigns and improve elections.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
So if you eliminated Citizens United from this equation, could an individual make unlimited campaign, make unlimited contributions to an independent expenditure group?
I just need to think about that for a second.
People like the George Soros or on the left, or the Koch brothers on the right?
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux, I want to be careful in answering that because the entity is who can do the unlimited spending, and that is because, you know, corporations are defined as people and not limit the people's free speech rights. Backing up where the money comes from to support that unlimited spending, so from a wealthy individual, there are a couple things that would influence that because there are existing campaign laws, which is why the super PACs become so important because then you bundle all those funds. So people otherwise have to operate under existing contribution limits. But then by bundling all that money together, the unlimited spending would come from the super PAC. And so I want to double check and make sure I have a complete understanding of your question. But the unlimited money is coming from the entity, and I want to double check on how it would otherwise limit the individual person's ability to donate to that entity.
But
Representative Ledoux,
if you banned unlimited money coming from an entity, a wealthy person who wished to make contributions could make those contributions not as part of an entity, but just themselves, couldn't they?
Well, through the chair to Representative Ledoux, right now there are restrictions about individuals' abilities, for example, like our campaign finance reforms or laws, pardon me, where I as an individual can only donate $500 per calendar year to each candidate. So on an individual basis, there are limitations in that way, but under this mechanism, the money isn't going from me, individual, to, you know, person's campaign. The money is going into this other pot through the super PAC and then being distributed through that way. So they're a little bit different in terms of, as an individual, are you contributing to a campaign? Because there are both federal and state limits on that. For example, a federal presidential campaign is a $4,000 limit per person. So there are limits on individuals as they donate to individual campaigns. But under this other mechanism where the individual is putting it into the bigger pot of money and then the unlimited spending is happening there, that's where the problem is.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, I think that the sponsor's correct. I think that if, for example, an Alaskan wanted to give directly to the campaign to reelect Lisa Murkowski of the United States Senate $1 million of their own personal money, they could not do that under existing federal law or even interpretations of federal law. There are limits on individual persons' capacity to donate, which in some respects makes this even more onerous. That is, makes the Citizens United decision even more onerous. And I think the thinking of the decision was, as long as there is no coordination between the PAC and the campaign, it somehow cleanses the process.
Thank you. Representative Birch.
I think it was Michael, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it was Michael Bloomberg in New York. I think he put, by some accounts, as much as $260 or $270 million of his own money into the unprecedented three terms that he ran. I think he started out as a Democrat and then switched to Republican, but I think if you have that much money, it doesn't really matter. But you know, he put a lot of money into
where do you feel, so feel personal like dollar sign.
Lots of dollar signs. But so anyway, I mean, I don't know that we're going to prohibit that in this effort. So, thank you.
And through the chair to that is a yet another category of spending where you have different things that you as the individual can do to invest in your own campaign.
Representative Wohl was next in the queue.
Oh,
Representative
okay.
Ledoux, we got you as well. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess two questions. Responding to what Representative Birch just said, I mean, I think the comedian Bill Maher gave Barack Obama's campaign $1 million of his own dollars. So I don't know if that's the limit, but it sounded like he just wrote a check for $1 million. Person to candidate or campaign. So I don't know. Representative Justice said you can't do that. I guess we don't know enough. Can you comment on that?
Well, through the chair to Representative Wohl, that's, I would say, another challenge with understanding what's going on in campaigns, because the presidential campaigns have multiple organizations, and I would want to check, and we will for sure check for that particular donation. But, for example, there was the Organizing for America. There was the actual campaign. So the actual campaign I know has the individual contribution limit. So it makes me think that it was through one of these like associated organizations that was also supporting the campaign but was able to disclose that. Because the individuals themselves are allowed to say that they're making the contributions. It's the lack of requirement for disclosure is on the group making the contributions.
Follow up. Thank you. Last one, Gabrielle. someone suggested to me, just off the cuff, that in Alaska, and I don't know if this would work in a national campaign, that we should only allow contributions from individuals to candidates and from individuals that live in Alaska. That's it for our political candidates, and no corporations, no unions, no nothing, just people giving to the candidate at whatever limit we have, and those people must live in Alaska. It's an interesting concept. It would certainly strip out a lot of the noise. I don't know that would work on a national level, just allowing individuals, because individuals are the ones who vote. Corporations don't vote. So what are your thoughts on those concepts?
Through the chair to Representative Wohl, there's actually an active court case right now where someone is suing in Alaska to increase our campaign contributions. And it's still a surprise to me, frankly, that people have $500 they're willing to donate to a non-tax deductible purpose, not a nonprofit. It's just, you know, that people have that kind of disposable income. So I may not be in the category of people who is among the, I'm certain I'm not in the category of people who's among the big donors. But I guess it's sort of, if we think about our role as representatives and how we want people to participate, how do we ensure that people have equal access? And we are really founded on a one person, one vote foundation. And I think the perception is that when there's too much spending, it really erodes the one person, that one vote, because one voice is so much louder and can drown out one really wealthy voice can drown out so many other smaller, poorer ones. So if we did that in Alaska, I think our limits for out-of-state contributions are pretty low, actually. I want to say just a few thousand dollars for a House campaign. Yeah, and think it might be double that for the other. So these days, people are spending $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 on their House and Senate campaigns. So that influence of a few thousand dollars probably isn't substantial, although I know people are always looking for it, particularly on initiative campaigns, because people don't like the idea of outside groups being able to use money. And Alaska is a relatively inexpensive market for TV and radio relative to other places. So if you're from a national group that wants to sort of set a precedent on a policy or have influence, Alaska might be a place that you want to go, because your dollars can stretch farther than other places. So I think there's reasons that we should be concerned about the dollars that come from outside, maybe not so, as much on the individual campaigns, but more on the initiatives and other efforts, so that people don't feel like it's, you know, residents of another state that are trying to dictate Alaska policy.
Representative Ledoux, you're next.
So one of the things that concerns me about both overturning Citizens United and actually the way we have our campaign contributions laws set up right now is that, number one, to a certain extent, making it more difficult for people to raise money for campaigns is almost an incumbents re-election act, because it costs so much more if you're not an incumbent to get your name out here. And incumbents have, for example, in the U.S. Congress, incumbents have the ability to send out mail. They have the privilege of the frank, which I never knew how important that could be until I started sending out legislative newsletters and figured out how expensive it was. Mm-hmm. So incumbents can send out mail to their constituents without any charge for it, whereas somebody who's challenging an incumbent is going to spend many, many dollars on those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the situation where you look at the U.S. Congress, you look at the U.S. Senate, and there are a lot of very, very wealthy people who could easily write out million-dollar, multi-million-dollar checks to their own campaigns. And so you make it more difficult for people to raise money from other sources. Those people, and Congress and the U.S. Supreme Court, I think, has said, you know, clearly and emphatically that you can't, you know, that it's one thing to put a campaign expenditure or a contribution limit on the outside or contributors, but you can't do it on the candidate themselves, that is inherent to free speech. So when a multimillionaire like John Kerry, and I mean, I can't think of too many right now, but I know you go and you list, you take a look, and you see what the net worth of our U.S. senators are in this country, and most of them are folks who could actually write a couple of million-dollar checks. So the minute you make it more difficult for people to raise money, then the folks who can simply write a check are at a huge advantage, even more of an advantage than they would normally be.
Through the chair to Representative Ledoux, I think those are really good points, and somewhat related to this, but some of it speaks to some of the other issues that we should probably address in our overall governance in terms of access to being a candidate and there are people I know, some people support publicly financed campaigns for that reason, for example. So then you kind of level the playing field. Everybody gets equal access to the same number of dollars and the same TV time or something like that. But what I would say is kind of interesting if you kind of compare the scenarios. In Alaska, if someone donates $51 to you, right, if you're over the $50, you have to say their name plus their employer and their profession. But here we're talking about people being able to spend millions and millions of dollars in an undisclosed way. And I guess that for me is such a contrast. If we're so concerned about the influence of the $51 that someone might spend and we want to know what their job is because of that potential perception of influence, wouldn't we be really concerned about the people who are spending millions and millions and millions of dollars to have some kind of influence? And, you know, I think if some of this had to be disclosed, people might respond differently. But that's why you hear people talk about it. It's the dark money. It's the lack of understanding of who even put these dollars in. It's so troubling.
I understand that. So mm-hmm. I think I'd probably be more comfortable with a law or a resolution that requires disclosure of the people who donate to the ballot initiatives or to the independent expenditure campaigns. But, you know, what I like to see is transparency. And I'm not necessarily all that concerned with the dollar figure itself.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Got Representative Josephson, then Representative Birch, and at that time I would love to adopt the CS.
Question for the sponsor. Page 2, lines 11 to 14, refers to a state election to affirm our contribution limits, I guess, in some way. Do you know when that was?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I believe it was the work of David Finkelstein. So that was in the early 90s, I want to say, right? Maybe it was 1994, but we can certainly double-check that and get that exact date. Pardon me for not having it.
And I have, a vague recollection there was an initiative in 98 or 2000.
There was an initiative, as I recall, in 2000, and it was the same election year that Sarah Palin became the governor.
2006. Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I think this references the earlier campaign finance laws, but we will double-check that, and I apologize.
They changed in 2006, and what happened in 2006 was that everything was halved. Prior to 2006, PACs could give $2,000, individuals could give $1,000 through a voter initiative, I believe spearheaded by Eric Croft, who's now on the assembly or the school board. It went down to 1,500.
Representative Birch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One objection I would raise to a comment you have made was that some would, would respond to communications in a manner that would favor those who are contributors. And I just have to say, on a personal note, I respond to every email and every phone call, literally, every email and phone call that comes across the threshold. And I don't know anybody in this building that is put together in a way that they would screen, if you will, their communications in a manner that favors those who are contributors or supporters. So I mean, it's great to talk about that in a broad general sense, but when you get down to the nitty gritty, you're talking about people, and there's 60 elected legislators in this building, and I don't think that's a fair characterization. Through the chair. Thank you.
Representative Tarr, briefly, and then we can adopt the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Birch, I really appreciate those comments and want to be very careful in how we state things. So thank you for getting that on the record, and I would agree 100% with you. And unfortunately, I think it's the public perception that we're up against, not the reality of actually how we operate. But thank you so much for getting those comments on the record.
Points well taken. Representative Wool, a motion?
I move to adopt version 3.0. There's no HB.
Work version number or work draft number.
Work draft number, okay. I move to adopt version 3.0-LS0274/D as the working document.
Object.
Representative Birch, objection. Would you like to speak to your objection?
I just don't think this is a good idea. Thank you.
Before we take a vote, even just adopting this as a CS objection. Okay. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Representative Birch?
No.
Representative Johnson? Not present. Representative Tuck? Not present. Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Knopf?
Yes.
Representative Wolf?
Yes.
Representative Tuck? Not present. Representative Levine?
Yes.
Chair Price Tompkins?
Yes. And by five yeas and one nay, the CS for HJR 11 is adopted as the working document for the committee. As noted earlier, going to hold this legislation for further consideration. Appreciate the sponsor bringing this forward. And for the rest of the committee, I know there's at least one other piece of legislation that we will hear this session, and there may be oversight hearings on the subjects of election security and or the correction system that Speaker Edgman and President Kelly both had the opportunity to learn about in Norway, and Commissioner Williams as well. So those are subjects that may be further explored depending on how the session evolves. But for now, we're adjourned at 4:05 p.m.